Welcome to Inside Analog Photo. I'm your host, Scott Shepard. The Inside Analog Photo radio program is all about the traditional photographic process. We talk about all aspects of analog photography, including the hybrid workflow. You can find out more information over at www.insideanalogphoto.com. And of course, Inside Analog Photo is brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful. These guys have the coolest instant photography materials known to mankind. They have, of course, the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4x5, color and black and white. They have the Instax systems in the wide format, the Instax 210 camera and film, and of course, the Instax Mini in the Instax Mini 7 and the Instax Mini 25, both in color film. Beautiful stuff. There's nothing cooler than instant photography. You get a print, because if you don't have a print, you don't have a real photograph. This is great fun stuff. This is great for art. This is great for business. This is cool stuff. You definitely want to check them out over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends over at Photo Publicist, providing worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development for the photographer, turning photographers into celebrities. You can find out more information over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the highest quality work known to mankind anywhere on this planet. Unbelievable developing, scanning, and of course, output on high quality Fuji Crystal Archive. Unbelievable cool stuff these guys are up to. And remember, you don't have a photograph unless you have a print in your hand, and you need to print your pictures. This is important. You need to supply proofs to your customers and even print your own work, because it's not about looking at it on a monitor. It's about holding a print in your hand. Definitely check these guys out at Richard Photo Lab, of course, at richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 Chrome Black and White Developing, that turns your black and white neg into, that's right, black and white chrome. Unbelievable stuff. www.dr5.com. Our friends over at Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com for the camera strap that will not slip off your shoulder, guaranteed bar none, the coolest strap around. Our friends at Iger Studios for the finest quality drum scans known to mankind, igerstudios.com. Our official media partner, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, for all things traditional photographic process on the web, www.apug.org. And our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.eastmanhouse.org. Today on the Inside Analog Photo Radio program, we're going to have with us Tim Nielsen. Tim is a purveyor over at FlickrFilmsLA.com. That's right. Tim is a filmmaker, of course, shooting on film. Super 8, all kinds of great stuff. We're going to be talking to Tim about his love for film, how he works, and what he's using for information. So I think this is great to add to Inside Analog Photo, Motion Photo. Tim, how's it going today?
It's going well. How about you?
Good, buddy. Thanks for joining us here on Inside Analog Photo. Great to have you on the program today. Tim, let's tell people what you're up to. You're a cinematographer. You create motion pictures. You make motion photography, and of course, you do this on film. That is very cool.
Yeah, I do. I shoot most of my stuff on Super 8 film, which a lot of people might think they don't make it anymore. But yeah, I'm actually still making it, and it's getting better than it ever was.
It's incredible with the stocks, and we're going to talk about this. But Tim, let's talk about yourself. Have you always wanted to make films? Have you shot still photography? What got you into making these films? More so, I think you're really probably what specializing in wedding cinematography.
I kind of had a passion for shooting on film ever since junior high, high school. I picked up my parents' old Super 8 camera and just started messing around with it, just shooting random stuff here and there and kind of putting it together. And I did a little bit of editing on their old reel-to-reel splicer and basically just started from there and kind of wanted to get into independent filmmaking and just kind of telling stories through that medium. And I just found that it had a much warmer and romantic feel to it than anything on video, even in high school with limited resources. Definitely a lot cheaper to shoot on video, but it just stuck with the Super 8 and just really liked how it looked and went from there. As far as the wedding thing goes, I was shooting a few weddings here and there for friends on video and still kind of had my passion for Super 8 film. And I was just curious if anyone had ever tried to shoot a wedding on Super 8 film before. And I did some research on the internet and found a guy in New York that was actually making wedding films on Super 8. And I found that I was watching his stuff and I could watch hours of footage of strangers' wedding videos where friends would try to make me sit down and watch theirs and you could barely stand 10 minutes of it.
So, did you do any traditional schooling in cinematography and movie making? Of course, with this interest in high school, did you carry this any farther forward, or is it just that you were like, okay, I'm going to pick this rig up and just do it?
Basically, yeah, I just kind of picked it up and kind of learned as I went along. I would get stumped on stuff, and so I'd go and do some research in the library or look it up on the internet. Film, there's just a ton of stuff out there that you can get a hold of and read how it's been done and just kind of go from there.
I think there's a wealth of knowledge that's out there on the internet now and also in books, and people are surprised what you can learn from going to the library. Because this art and craft, the cinematography, has been around for, well, over 100 years now. So there's definitely some good publications. And I think even books back from the 50s, 60s, and 70s are quite applicable today, especially when it comes to these movies that you're making.
Yeah, definitely. Books from the 70s and stuff are actually perfect for what I'm doing because I'm using the same film stocks they're using and using my camera from 1979. So getting the tips from these guys that are using the same equipment and using the same tools still works perfect today. So it's great. There's a lot of stuff out there that you can just kind of do research on and learn yourself. I mean, it may have taken me longer to do it, but basically got all the knowledge for free.
Well, no, it's great. You did it on your own time, your own deal, and you didn't have anybody else's influence pretty much poured into what you were doing. Great to go to film school, but it's very costly and time consuming. And I think it's great what you've been up to. What was the thought, Tim, about wanting to convey the emotional deal of a wedding day? Like you said, you'll sit down and try to watch somebody's wedding video, and a lot of the stuff, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because it's video, there's no organic, romantic feel like there is with film, but why would you want to go shoot wedding videos?
Well, wedding videos is kind of just what I fell into. Like I said, I was doing them for a while for people, and then about 5 years ago, I started shooting them on film, and it's just kind of been a passion of mine ever since to just take this kind of weird medium for film and actually make something. In my opinion, wedding videos never really look good or interesting to me. And so it's just kind of been a passion to take something that kind of has a negative connotation and make it beautiful and make it watchable and have that romantic feel to it. My process is basically I want to shoot how you felt on that day, not what actually necessarily happened. And so you take all those romantic feelings and these emotions and enhance people's memories of that. And like you said, shooting on film definitely has that more organic feel.
No, I think so. And I think that with the different use of media that you're shooting as well, you can change the emotion of the moment depending on what film stock you're shooting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I use a variety of film stocks, and Kodak still makes a bunch of stuff, which was surprising to me when I first started shooting in high school that they even made that. I mean, I think just last year they introduced their new Vision 3 series, and the Vision 3 500T is amazing as far as low light capabilities, and it's got something like, I think, 7 stops of latitude. And so if you're shooting in low light situations or in weddings in a church where maybe all the shots are going to be backlit, everything comes out nice and crisp. And then you have the reversal stocks as well that just have that amazing surreal quality to them where everything is oversaturated and just gorgeous. Everything turns out looking like the Wizard of Oz almost.
Now, there is so much stuff, and then we have traditional black and white you can shoot still. I think, especially with you being in the LA area, that it makes it convenient to get this stuff developed and telescene. Let's talk about gear. What are you shooting with, Tim? What kind of cameras are you using?
I have a couple different cameras. I have a Canon 1014 XLS, which is my main camera that I shoot with. And I also have a Canon 1014 Electric, which is basically the silent film version of the XLS. I prefer the XLS just because it was made to shoot sound film, and so the camera is actually a little bit quieter. So I don't usually get anybody saying, oh, I heard the camera much, but just for my own comfort, I'm more comfortable getting closer to the bride during maybe the quieter parts and the vows and stuff like that with a camera that makes a little bit less noise. And then I use the 1014 Electric for kind of my backup camera, or if I have a second shooter with me, I'll give them that and just kind of run around getting some cutaway shots.
Wow, very cool. And I know that the 1014 was the top of the line of the Canon Super 8 cameras. Have you tried any of the other Canons, the 500 series? The 310 is pretty unique.
Yeah, I've actually looked into getting the 310. The 310 comes in actually an autofocus, and so I was kind of curious to play around with that and see how that works. Because with Super 8, focus is difficult for one and really important because of the shallow depth of field. But yeah, I was thinking about playing around with that one, and they actually have on one of the 310 models, they have something like a 1.0 lens on there. And so I was curious to try that out in some low light situations. But as of yet, I haven't shot much on anything other than the 1014. I had an 814 for a while.
Did you like the 814?
Well, I actually really like the 814. Really, the only difference between the 814 and the 1014 is the lens isn't as long, so you don't have as much of a zoom with the 814, but the images are still really crisp with the 814 lens. The only reason I don't use it anymore is because it was stolen from my truck, so.
Well, that takes care of that one, dude. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Now, do you shoot all the Super 8, Tim, at 14 frames a second, the traditional Super 8 speed, or will the 1014 let you shoot at like 24?
It kind of depends on the situation. If it's a little bit of a lower light situation, I'll shoot it at 18 frames a second. But I actually really like the look of the 24 frames per second. It gives it a little bit more of that cinematic feel, and then I actually have the capability to shoot at 36 as well, the 1014. And so when I know I have a shot that I'm going to want to slow down, I'll go ahead and shoot it at 36. That way when it's telescene at 24, it comes out just a bit slower, and it's still nice and smooth, and you have those nice crisp images to it.
Based off the name of your company with Flickr Films, you find the 18 gives you definitely that Super 8 flickery, very 70s homish type look.
Yeah, it kind of depends on the look and the feel that I'm going for. 18 definitely has more of that home movie feel to it. And so I'll shoot some stuff at 18. I've actually, in really low light situations, actually shot at 9 before just for a little bit. But that tends to give you a really bad flicker. I mean, in some situations, it kind of gives it a cool look for a bit, but an entire film shot on that would not be the greatest look.
No, so we got the great Canon gear, and I know, of course, Nikon made these cameras. There's these guys in Hollywood, the Pro 8 cats, have their own cameras where they're doing different gates, and they're doing Super 8, right? It's like Super 8 wide format.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of research on that. They're calling it Super Duper 8 in some of these blogs, because I know the Super 16 is basically 16 wide format. So it's basically the same thing. They just kind of file out the film gate, and then during the telecine process, they zoom out a bit, and you have that widescreen in the Super 8 without having to crop at all. And so I've seen some stuff that's come from the widened gate on the Super 8 cameras. I like the look of it. I would definitely use it if I were making a short film on Super 8. That's definitely something I would look into. But as far as like the wedding videos, kind of gets back to the whole reason of using the Super 8 format for the wedding videos is that kind of old home movie nostalgic look. So the 4:3 aspect ratio actually lends itself to that very well.
No, I think it's still very applicable too. I mean, you look it on the web, it doesn't need to be widescreen. If you look at portable devices like the iPod or the iPhone, they're still not 16:9. They're really 4:3. I mean, it's close as you're going to get. I mean, I think it's a great looking format, and I think everything doesn't need to be wide format. And I think, like you said, it lends to the coolness of the Super 8 film to be traditionally somewhat of a square format. It's cool.
Yeah, for sure. No, there's tons of equipment out there as far as different cameras for lens interchangeability. I was actually talking to a couple of photographer friends of mine that shoot on a Leica, telling them that Leica in the early 70s made a Super 8 camera that basically uses the same Leica M-mount lenses.
Wow, wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, I mean, you can use the 10mm Leica M-mount lens and shoot on Super 8 and get that amazingly crisp image from the Leica lens.
That's cool. So let's talk about this whole workflow. So you go to some lab, I'm assuming somewhere in LA, and these guys develop your film, either it be black and white, the color neg, the Vision 2, Vision 3 stuff. Fuji has film. There's a Pro 8 that's loading different kinds of stock and slicing their own. So, I mean, there's so much cool stuff. How do you do this? So they do a telescene that basically is a higher speed roll scan. They scan the film in continuous video and give you, what, a hard drive back, right?
Yeah, basically I'll bring my hard drive into them. I have all my stuff processed and transferred at Spectra in Hollywood. I used to do a lot of it myself, not so much for the wedding stuff, but before I got into the wedding, transferred on the old Elmo machine and do a lot of that myself. But the image quality that you get from the true frame-by-frame transfer, and they do all the color grading and everything there in the lab, and you can't beat it. They do an amazing job there. And like I said, everything is transferred frame-by-frame, and they have a variety of ways that they can give it back to you. They could either give it to you at the true kind of the 29.9 frames per second with the pull-down, or you can get it actually transferred at exactly 24 and do all your speed correction in post. I mean, they know their stuff. They do a lot of stuff for Hollywood films. They do a lot of 35 motion picture stuff, too. So they know what they're doing there.
Even if you shot the stuff, let's say you use 310 XL or whatever, and you shoot it at 18 frames a second, the typical Super 8 speed, do you find that you just have everything telescened at 24, or do you go 29.97 and just do a correction in post?
Well, right now I'm having all my stuff transferred at 24, and so I do most of my shooting at 24. They can do it in an 18 frames per second transfer there. But the actual file that they'll give you on the hard drive, it's going to be an interlaced file, and then you could de-interlace in post.
Right.
But they do give you the option, actually, of having the true 24, or if you shot it at 18, the true 18. Then, obviously, you would have to do some speed correction later on, just getting it into video. I was talking to Spectra the other day. They're actually getting into doing some HD transfers. Most of the high-end video cameras now are shooting at 24p, and so they're going to offer a true progressive scan. 24 frames per second, which I'm actually really anxious to try out.
Because what you're getting is interlaced, right?
Yeah, they'll give me an interlaced file. And so usually I'll pull that into Final Cut. They'll give me a ProRes file, and I'll put that into Final Cut and deinterlace it in there and do that in post.
Wow, very, very cool. So getting to that, you had mentioned that you're using Final Cut Pro to do your post-production then.
Yeah, I use all Final Cut. I'm kind of a Mac guy. I've been using Mac for a long time, and I find that Final Cut, it's got everything I need to do in there. It's basically just what I got used to, and I mean, it works great for what I'm doing. Basically, the file that I get from the lab is the same as a file I would get from shooting something on video, and it opens up in Final Cut the same way.
Nice. Now, do you find that once you bring this data into Final Cut, I guess the file they give you at the lab is like a DV file? You get an MOV DV file that's a regular 24 megabit regular DV file.
Yeah, they have a couple different options. I mean, they can give me the Apple ProRes file, or they can give me the 10-bit uncompressed file.
Nice.
So, I mean, there's a lot of different options there as far as that goes.
Yeah, well, if you can get 10-bit uncompressed, that's crazy cool. Let's tell people that when you're shooting a Super 8 cartridge is what, 60-foot or 50-foot worth of film? I think it's 50, right?
Yeah, they're 50 feet, and depending on what frame rate you shoot at, you'll either get at 18 frames a second, it's about 3 minutes and 20 seconds, and then at 24 frames per second, you have about 2.5 minutes. So you get 2.5 minutes of continuous footage before you have to change.
So basically, you're going to cover a whole wedding, because I know some of the wedding, the movies that are on your site, one's like 15 minutes long. You must have burned through a crazy amount of film.
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the client and what they're looking for. If they're wanting just a ton of coverage, I know I shot a wedding, it was a two-camera shoot, and I used about 24 reels of film. And so I edited it down, and the final product that I gave the bride was about 45 minutes long.
Wow.
And so it varies from about 10 reels on average to up to 24.
Right, and you figure one cartridge of Vision 3 500T is about $20 a pop, just for the film.
Yeah, just for the film. They do offer discount packages when you buy the film, have it processed and transferred all at once. So I'll usually do those packages just to keep the cost down.
I mean, okay, so let's say as an example, so let's say it's $20 for the film, and then what's it cost to have this stuff developed and telescene? So what does it usually run if you take in one Super 8 cartridge and get it back on, say, uncompressed 10-bit or whatever you get it in, ProRes 422?
The more film you bring in, the cheaper the telecine is, but it usually ends up being about $50 per reel when I bring in as many as I do. But if you were to do it one at a time, it could cost you maybe $100 per reel. But yeah, on average, when you bring in between 10 and 20, it's usually about $50 per reel by the time you get it from film to a workable file that you can put into Final Cut.
So definitely a luxury item for brides to have a Super 8 film made. Because let's say you go through and shoot at least 10 rolls at a wedding for like an average coverage, right? So you got 10 rolls of the film plus the processing, you're looking at least $500 plus all the time in your craftsmanship and then editing. This is definitely not an economical little video package that somebody would have and come out and shoot with a video camera.
Yeah, and it turns out better because of that. I mean, I know when I'm shooting film as opposed to video, I'll turn the camera on and just keep shooting. But with the film, I'm definitely more aware of the shots that I'm getting. I do things on purpose, and I know the shot that I want to get, and I get it perfect, and I get it right. You realize when one shot is costing you $10-$20, you make sure you get it, and you make sure you get it right. So when you get that footage back, the quality is all that much better because of it.
Yeah, well, I think it's the same thing with our friends that are shooting film. You go out and shoot film, you don't burn through the stuff like digital. You think about it, you compose, you plan your stuff, just like you're doing.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, have you ever had an interest in actually shooting still photography, or it's always been movie making, video, that type of stuff?
I've shot a little bit of still photography. I bring my Holga with me to weddings and kind of shoot a few stills here and there, mostly just for kind of a DVD cover and the case and everything. But yeah, I really like the look of motion picture film and just being able to capture a moment.
No, and I think this stuff's great. You know what's so cool about it, though, Tim, is you can hang out with all your buddies that are actually wedding photographers and not really take business away from them. So you're not a threat to no one, right?
Yeah, I actually have some good friends of mine, Brian and Brandon Wright. They're shooting weddings on film. And when we hang out, there's none of that jealousy there that we're taking jobs away from each other because we're all in the LA area. But we're giving jobs to each other. Like, I'll get a job and throw the still photography their way, and they'll do the same for me. So it actually works out really well that way. I mean, I know of a few other Super 8 shooters, but as far as my immediate group of people that I know and hang out with, I'm kind of the only one that's doing it. So
there is only a few guys that are doing it, and it definitely pulls in a premium. So without giving away the horse and buggy, I mean, what is a typical deliverable? Like a 5-8 minute movie? What do you typically find is like an entry level package when someone comes to Tim and say, hey, I'd love to have you shoot my wedding on some motion. I'd love to have you make a real film.
Well, basically, no matter how much film I'm using, I'm there all day. I don't want to miss anything, just like they don't want me to miss anything. And if I only have two reels of film, and I have to use one at the very beginning of the day, and I don't use the other till the end. That makes my film that much better than great. But yeah, it just depends on how long the bride or the groom wants the finished product to be. And I'll kind of go from there as far as how much film I think I need to use, and packages will be priced accordingly as far as that goes. Typically, it's about a 15 to 20 minute finished film. Like I said, I did shoot one a while ago that I used 24 reels, and it ended up being about 45 minutes finished film.
Wow.
But that's definitely not typical.
So a typical film, I mean, you're talking $5,000 investment, I would think, minimum.
Basically, my lowest package is about $3,000, and it goes up from there.
That's a great value, I think, for as much work as you spend. You have a full day on location, plus all the other stuff, and all the time you took to learn this craft. Because let's face it, there's a lot of people that can get into wedding photography these days. They go buy a digital camera, blah, blah, blah. But you're not going to do that by shooting motion picture film. It ain't going to happen.
Yeah, you definitely need to know what you're doing. I mean, you can look in the viewfinder of a digital camera and you know if it's working, even if you don't know anything about the camera. But I mean, you could shoot all day on the Super 8, and if you don't get your exposure right, you don't know until 2 weeks later when you get your film back.
So let's talk about this exposure. Do you rely on what's in the 10-14 Canon to give you an exposure? Personally, I have a 310 XL with the F10 lens, and I got a red flag that's sort of like, okay, yay or nay. But there's no real exposure. Here's another thing too, the 500T, I think a lot of people probably don't know, but Super 8 has these little notches, and it tells the camera what speed you're using, but I don't think when they made the 310 XL or even the 10-14 that they had a 500 speed tungsten film. So you either have to completely tweak the cartridge or tweak the camera or somehow play mind games somewhere to get this exposure right.
Yeah, the highest speed film that the Super 8 cameras will detect in there with the notches is 400. Yeah, so when you put the 500 speed in there, you technically could rely on just the camera's auto exposure.
Because it's color net, it'll overexpose it, it'll still look beautiful.
You can overexpose it and it'll look great. So you can rely on that, but I'll pull it out and use manual just so that you don't see the iris changing when you're panning across from maybe a darker area to a lighter area. I try to make the wedding films look as much like an old film as I possibly can. And so you lock that exposure in there and you pan across. Yeah, so there's definitely some little tricks to convince the camera that you know better.
Are you using an external light meter? Do you use a typical, say, Konic meter made for cinematography? I mean, how are you figuring the metering out, or just sort of overriding it to the point that you have enough experience that you can just say, this is what I'm looking for, bro, and I'm going to roll?
Yeah, well, I've used the Konic light meters before, and a lot of the times what I'll do is I'll just kind of use the camera's internal light meter, and I'll see what it wants to shoot at, and I'll point it at my object and see what the camera's saying as far as the light meter goes, and adjust it slightly from there, and then I'll lock it. But for a lot of stuff, especially outdoors, you look at it by eye, and you just kind of know what your exposure needs to be, and you can tweak it from there.
Plus, too, I mean, with 500T, and I know that our friend, the Brothers Wright, have been playing around with 500T and some still issues and playing and doing some testing, but that film has so much latitude that you can basically drive it in the wall, and it's going to look beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
The stuff's incredible.
Yeah, you definitely have a lot of forgiveness with that stuff. I mean, with the 7 or even more stops of latitude with the new Vision 3 500, I mean, you could overexpose accidentally by 2 or 3 stops, and you're still going to be safe, and it's still going to look great.
Oh, definitely. We haven't talked about it. I want to send people to your site now. So before we leave, we'll give them the address again, but where do they go look at your stuff? Because you have, I know, a couple films up now on your website. The stuff is just beautiful.
Yeah, the website is flickrfilmsla.com.
Yeah, they definitely need to check out your films because they're very cool. I love the choice of music. I know that some people complain about using copyrighted stuff, but the music that you've picked for these movies for your clients are really not typically shown off in public, and it's for your client and blah, blah, blah. We can get into whatever, but the music goes along so well with what you've shot. And I think when you look at the look of the film and a lot of this footage, you couldn't really tell if it was shot in 2010 or 1968.
Yeah, that's the beauty of Super 8.
It's beautiful. You
know, yeah, it has that nostalgic look to it that I find just absolutely beautiful.
What are you finding, Tim, for people that are wanting to have you do these films? What kind of clientele are we looking at? Are you looking at younger hipster people that want to be more retro? Do you find that it's more educated people that are in the entertainment industry already? I mean, what are you seeing for a client base that's looking to have this kind of work done?
Yeah, you definitely see a lot of the younger hipster kind of crowd going for the Super 8 just because it has that more artsy feel to it. But I've had a bride who was a model and just, I think, kind of knew her stuff as far as look and just kind of the feel of film and just definitely the aesthetics of it. And she just fell in love with the Super 8 and wouldn't have it any other way. She was actually not going to go with a videographer at all. And when she saw my stuff, she saw the Super 8. It convinced her not only to go with the Super 8, but to have anything.
Now, do you ever find that your clients actually want to have the film itself so they can run it through a projector? Have you had the issue of, okay, I'm going to cut this actually by hand and deliver you a piece of film in a reel? Or is it like, I'm just going to do it digital. You can have these files. I'll make you a DVD. Here's one for YouTube, blah, blah, blah. How do you typically deliver this? Or how do you find that people want to have this delivered? Does anybody ever want to actually have the film themselves?
Yeah, that's actually funny. We were talking about Brian and Brandon Wright. I'm actually shooting Brandon's wedding coming up here next month. And he's the first one that's ever asked me for the original film. I think he wants it, obviously, I mean, as a film guy. And I told him we could look through it and I have a splicer and we can kind of go through it and actually make like 400-foot reel of the finished film. We can edit it by hand just the way they used to, and he can show it and have somebody even play live music to it if you wanted. But he's the only one that's ever asked me so far. I mean, I love that idea. It's not something that I would typically want to do for every bride, just because how time-consuming and how tedious it would be. And I don't think that once the brides realize how much time that's going to take to actually cut all that up and put that together and how expensive that would be, I think it would cease to be worth it for them. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that I've been interested in doing. Actually, I was kind of excited when Brandon was talking about doing that.
No, that is pretty cool. Now, do you ever have the thought, it's like, okay, well, now I want to shoot some 16. And now are you lusting over an RE35? I mean, does it get to the point to where you're like, okay, I want to step this up, but pretty soon you could turn this into a movie production with jibs and swing deals. You could get crazy with it, or you can keep it very intimate and personal with what you're doing now.
Yeah, I've considered shooting on 16, and I have a 16mm camera that I could shoot. And if I had somebody that really wanted it, I definitely could shoot on 16. But yeah, I mean, I really enjoy the simplicity of the Super 8 and mostly handheld and not a whole lot of equipment with me. And that's kind of my style too at the wedding, is I'm not there as far as anybody's concerned. I'm definitely not that guy that's going from table to table bothering people as they eat. I'm trying to kind of stay out of the way and get the actual feel of the wedding without affecting it myself. And so I think the more equipment you bring in, the more distracting you are. And I think that it definitely shows. I mean, people are much more comfortable when they don't know that they're on film.
Yeah, but I really, really want an RE Flex 416. I think it's about $200,000 by the time you outfit one. So that's not going to happen. I don't know why that I want one so bad, but Ari made this promotional little film about the 416 and the whole 16mm format. And It's just so sexy and cool. It's like, oh, I got to have one of those, dude. But it's not going to happen. Exactly. But like you said, though, with a Super 8, it's so intimate and small. You can actually just put the camera down by your side and just hang out. You're a guest. You're just looking what's going on. And then you can capture that moment. And as you well know, you shot video, you need tons of light and you need this. How many times have you been to a wedding where the video guy is there and he just turns on the sun gun and it just burns everything out? And it's just like, dude, I just don't want to go there.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of the 500T, is that, I mean, I can shoot outdoors at night with just candle lights or like the Christmas light kind of deals, and my exposure is going to be great and I can still see people's faces, and you actually capture what your eye is seeing. You don't have to flood everything with the light and just ruin the entire look of what people spent months trying to plan out for how they wanted their reception to look.
Yeah, I mean, as an example, the first film you have up on your website, if you go into like 4 minutes and 45 seconds, that scene where you're shooting behind the bride and groom and you sort of pan in, that's all candlelight. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people realize on how dim that room really was when you made that shot, and it's just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I fell in love with the 500T. Basically, if your eye can see it, 500T is going to come out nice. So, yeah, on video, that would have looked terrible, honestly. Just the noise and everything and the blacks and the shadows, it would be distracting. But, yeah, it comes out absolutely beautiful.
The only thing that would have looked better was 500T and 35mm.
Yes, sir.
But then you get into big rigs and it's bigger and it's louder and then it costs a lot of money. I mean, people don't realize how much it costs to shoot. 35 motion is bank.
Yeah, if I can start charging $30,000 for a wedding, I think that would be, I wouldn't mind using 35.
Yeah, but no, the stuff's beautiful. I mean, it's just so cool what you're doing. And I know that you have some more stuff you're going to be posting up on your website. And it's just amazing work. And I think that people that are into analog photography, you can get into doing some of this stuff and just shooting your family, your kids, whatever. You don't have to be a cinematographer to create beautiful home movies and shoot Super 8 and just experience the quality of analog film and motion photography is fun.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And it's very cool. So, Tim, tell me one more time here. Let's talk about resources, your website, where they can look at what you're doing. Is there other places where they can see what you're doing? Just so they can actually look at this beautiful work that you've been up to. Because I think this is very inspirational for people that are into analog photography to go shoot some motion stuff. They don't have to go into business and do this. You don't have to make it a business. You can spend a few hundred bucks on a camera off of eBay and shoot some film and have some fun. You never know what'll come up.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun for me. My website is flickrfilmsla.com, and I have a Vimeo site as well. That would be just vimeo.com/flickrfilms.
Yeah, Tim, this is beautiful work. I mean, a great site. Cool to see the stuff on Vimeo, and I just really appreciate you joining us today, and we look forward to having you back, chatting more about your motion cinematography and all this beautiful work that you're doing with this fine quality, true analog motion pictures. This is great stuff, buddy.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, there you go. Tim Nielsen, what a great guy. Beautiful photography, motion photography using high quality film, cool stuff. Beautiful, something you can't get from video or digital. Pretty neat stuff and something you guys should look at too. You know, there's a great way to pick up Super 8 cameras on eBay, other places, very, very economically priced, and actually shoot some motion film. It's pretty cool stuff. Definitely check out Tim's website over at www.flickrfilmsla.com. That's FLICKERFILMSLA.com. The Inside Analog Photo Radio Program has been brought to you by Fujifilm for their full line of instant cameras and film, and of course, fine quality Fuji Crystal Archive paper over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. Our friends at Photo Publicist, worldwide publicity, strategic promotion, social media marketing, and business development over at www.photopublicist.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab for the finest quality lab in the country, richardphotolab.com. Our friends over at DR5 for black and white chrome at dr5.com. Upstrap for the finest quality camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder at upstrap-pro.com. Our friends over at Iger Studios at igerstudios.com. And of course, our media partners of the Analog Photography User Group at apug.org and our official philanthropic partner, George Eastman House over at eastmanhouse.org. I've been your host, Scott Shepard, here on Inside Analog Photo. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.